What's poppin'? Brand new whip, just hopped in. I got options, I can pass that bitch like Stockton. Just joshin', I'ma spend this holiday locked in. My body got rid of them toxins.
Alright folks, welcome to the Muskie 360 podcast. Jay, are you doing super?
Hey Steve, I'm freezing it. You know, it's below zero.
It's super cold.
It's super cold right now.
You can find Jay at www.muskieshop.com. They got super stuff going on over there.
We do have super stuff going on.
Super
Steve.
Stuff.
I mean, like, yeah, coming out of the woodwork, bouncing out off the walls. Oh, man.
Friggin'.
Got Fred bouncing on tackle boxes, you name it.
Hey, Jay, congratulations. Yep. Good job. Jay did a really sweet-ass 2020 gear video, which was pretty cool.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah. Yeah, it's not all encompassing, you know, for everything that's coming out. But
all seven baits that are coming.
Yeah, you know, tried to cover about a bunch of the new stuff, whether it be, you know, a new custom color line or a completely new bait, you know. Obviously, the Livingston Titan was on the top of the list. That's going to be just a super, super, super duper great little bait. We're going to be getting those soon.
Oh, my God, finally. It's only been, like, forever. I've said it on here many times, and we're not going to harp on Titan or anything, but good God, man. Like, that has just been, like, God. I'll dish after the fact, and it's nobody's fault other than just the world. You know what I'm saying? But it's just like, oh, you dream about doing this, and it's just like, I could have driven the low Steve Paul special out there and gotten them myself. But anyway, I'm excited about that Savage Gear, that freaking thing. Hold on, let me pull this up. I have a computer.
Yes,
I don't want to.
Savage Gear sucker.
Jay, I don't mean to brag.
Yeah,
I have a computer.
Do you?
Y'all be damned.
You got one of them internet connections?
Boys, I'll tell you what. I look at the muskieshop.com and I look at Cornhub. It is just the hottest pictures of corn.
Names.
Let's hear.
Missouri. Yeah, you're pulling up the Savage Gear sucker. Yeah.
The one thing I'll say, because Jay, you know, there's some samples floating around there in the world. Mm-hmm. They're cool. I mean, it's a neat little swim bait alternative. So that was like one highlight I would bring up. Because it's not a dive and rise. It's just something else, which is that big fork, the cat lat.
Yeah, the sand cat, L-A-T, the live action tail. It's
cat lat.
Hey, they came in today.
Cadillac.
Got them on the website. Shot them all. Put them on there. They are nice. They look great in the water. I see that thing last fall. Tom LeBeau came over to visit the shop last fall, and we went over to a nearby lake and got to throw it off the piers and check it out. It's like, man, it looks good.
Is he what LeBeau? Remember the Motel 6? What, Tom Baudet? It was Motel 6.
You're way off target.
He said, oh, yeah. Whatever.
Yep.
That's cool.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? Yep. Huh? Go ahead.
Huh? No, I was just going to say, I like the sand cats just because it's like an interesting shallow. I mean, it's not dive and rise. It's like a twitchy, divey, risey, minnow twitchy thing.
Yes.
It gets lumped. They get lumped in with dive and rise, but they're really not. But I'm like, how big's that? We were talking about, actually, when I was on the way home from fishing today, we were talking about this bait, which is, it's what, 7 with the tail?
With the tail, yeah. I mean, the body's like 4.5-ish.
The body's right 2 inches.
It's not real big, but, yeah, and like you said, it's not a dive rise. You put with the LAT, it's become a new kind of thing. It is very shallow, very buoyant, great wiggle, and the thing is almost kind of leaning towards the crankbait territory more than jerkbait.
But it's both.
You apply it like a jerkbait, what's cool about it.
It's
completely different than, say, like an 8-inch sand cat.
Right,
it really is.
So, but it's very early seasonish to me,
for sure.
Negative and neutral fish. So, that's a cool bait. The other highlight, I mean, is the and I love the kid, man. Hooked on musky baits.
Christian.
Christian is the musky wonder kid. He's all of probably like 12 or 13. And he, you know, he's got his head on his shoulders and they do like, they are really nice. I've gotten some. He was actually at the Musky Shop Bash. I'm sure he'll be back again. But they do a killer job, man. It's like, you know, the whole family's pitching in here and doing their thing. And they're really nice. And I mean, bang for the buck. That's a neat thing. He sort of expanded his line where you got like,
what we got here?
We got the
six different bucktails now.
Got the French Tickler, the Firecracker. Actually, it's the Creedmoor. I just saw French Blades. Firecracker Bomb Bucktail. Nuclear Bomb Bucktail.
Oh, she's nuclear, baby.
Nuclear. And the Beowulf. Now this is what grade did your English teacher make you read Beowulf in, Jay?
You don't even want to know how the other guys at the shop pronounce that word.
How do they do it?
Differently.
Beowulf.
Oh man, I was going to tell you, Christian came in about a week or two ago. He dropped off the full line, right? And we were hanging out with him. He was helping us check him in and everything, and process all this and that. And he goes, "Hey Jay, you know, I listen to the podcast a lot." I go, "Well, do you? Hey, thanks." You know,
oh god, I feel now you feel bad.
He says he likes to listen to when he does the dishes and when he makes baits. Mm-hmm. And he showed me a selfie he took with himself holding a can of Pepsi.
Oh wow!
so he takes some things to heart. So that's good to see. And he's a good guy.
My blood sugar's messed up, but it ain't. It ain't from corn syrup, boys. No, it's cool stuff. But honest to goodness, man, he makes really good stuff.
Yeah, they're top notch.
They're top notch. I mean, they're legit. I like the Beowulf. How do they say it, Jay? Tell me. Narc on these people.
Beowulf.
Beowulf. Is it like Beowulf?
Yeah.
Beowulf. Japanese. Beowulf. Papa's on. Beowulf. Anyway, oh, I'm going to be highly disappointed if he doesn't come out with the Grendel.
Okay.
It's like literally like Beowulf is like every, like totally everybody that's listening that finished high school, which is seven of you. I'm not included in that. Now, I think everybody I know had to read that trash in high school, and like every high school English teacher is just like, "Oh, that's amazing. What literature?" It's like To Kill a Mockingbird just because they can make somebody read the one word in class. And then, well, they don't do that anymore.
I'm sure it's banned.
It's banned. Book burning. But you got the other thing is cool is the RJ Lures. That's out. Cool stuff, man. We'll keep you guys up to date, obviously. I'm just geeking out about some of the baits because there's not much. And it goes without saying, too, that everybody loves the Shallow Invader. It's a cool bait. The new Swimming Invader, which is the paddle tail version.
Uh-huh.
And, Jay, just being me here, any word on replacement tails for these?
Not specifically. He's had a hard time making those. I mean, it actually came out over a year ago.
Yeah,
and it was delayed and he had packaging issues, and then he had something with the mold or something.
Right,
and
it's just happens.
Like, I understand. Yeah, can't get it. You're not gonna put it out if it's subpar. He wants to get it right. So it took some time, and you know, we got a few shipments here and there, and they just bam, sold out immediately, you know. Mm-hmm. But we've got some now, but to answer your question, no, I'm not sure if he's going to be able to sell those and package them and get them to us in the near future, but I assume he will by summer,
you know,
by season time, you know,
our season time.
You're right, catching fish every day. It's supposed to be 23 below zero tonight. I don't even want to wake up in the morning.
Yeah, it's
suck the bluing off a Sig Sauer.
Jay, folks, everybody send thoughts and prayers. Jay got written up at work today because I thought he had lipstick on. It was actually bluing. Jay, please wash your mouth off. That's just gun oil.
Oh man. Well, the cold affects everybody differently. I mean, you know, with Fred, you know, it increases his appetite and mm-hmm. his energy and
just ready
and
to
sometimes
rock.
His stamina. Yeah.
Sometimes just his Have you thought about murdering Wally yet, Jay? Is the cabin fever setting in? Like, are you just peering out the window?
No, like, he's doing good. He's doing good, you know.
You know? Friggin', you got them winter crazies.
Yeah, everybody's snowmobiling right now and zipping up and down the street while I'm trying to talk to you on the phone, you know. It's a little annoying.
Just zipping the damn kids.
Life in Vilas County.
Damn kids on their snowmobiles.
You damn kids in your back.
Out there and shake your cane at them, Jay. Oh, goodness.
Yep, that's me.
Anyway.
But yeah, on that video, that it sounds like mm-hmm. to you, though, that those Savage Gear suckers really stood out to you as like, ooh, this thing looks cool.
It looks cool. I mean, it's I like swim baits. I like the... You know, it's 11 ounce, so it's a chunker.
Yeah.
That's
and
the
some
thing.
Of this other stuff yeah. I've shown you, you've already seen too. So
well, I've
that
seen
was
it,
probably like, more of a surprise. Yeah.
Well, the thing is this, if you look at a mag swimming dog, right?
Uh huh.
Mag swimming dog is, I got one hanging up here in the pack.
They're not that big.
I think it's 5 ounces, right? So the 12 Savage Gear is 11 ounces. So it's like, I think the mag swimming, seven ounces on the mag swimming dog. This dude's 11. So if you want to fish deep, the other thing is this is the reason I like that weight is if you need speed, you have less rise. You know what I'm saying? So like on a swimming dog or something like that, you can get it. It's going to stay deeper. And when I'm fishing swim baits, I'm not thinking about running them super shallow. At least for the way I fish. I know that works and they make shallow ones. But like if I want to fish rubber, I'm thinking deeper. So that allows for more speed before we're right subsurface. So, and they look good.
Yeah, they're not here yet. They were right. Savage told me that they'd have them in January. That was like the early January report was that they were going to get them this month.
Yeah, sounds familiar.
Right. So you know, it still could happen, and we could have them, you know, by the first week of February.
Yeah.
Knock on wood. I hope so. But yeah, if you're interested in this thing, you know, sign up on the website for that. Restock notification on the notify yeah, me thing, you know.
Well,
the first wave is going to go fast.
That's the thing is like any of that stuff that you're into. Also, too, it's catalog time. And I know we're hitting a bunch of Muskie Shop stuff, but if you want a catalog for this year, sign up for it now. If you want a Titan and you haven't signed up for the collar that you want, because when you get a notification, it's going to send you a notification per collar.
Yep.
Sign up for that. The Savage Gear stuff, those will be worth the bang. Like I said, for the way that we're talking about fishing on here, which is like, if it's something realistic and low and slow and depth oriented and structure fishing, that Savage Gear is going to do good stuff for you. I'll say this, dude, and it just irks me. Savage Gear sort of gets this Euro bait. They get sort of lumped in on this Euro bait thing where it's just like.
They do, yeah.
And they make good stuff. They really do. It's bang for the buck stuff, which I like because, you know, I mean, I'm not going out and buying a $600 bait. Actually, somebody sent me a picture this week of a $600 bait, which was, we'll talk about that some other time, but yeah. Which is ridiculous. Give me a break. But, you know, that's something worth looking at. Just if you're a swim baiter or a little bit budget friendly and, you know, whatever. So anyway, and also to sign up for Jody Michael's Live Edge Rustic Musky Coasters. Sorry. My wife.
Hey, the catalog. Catalog's coming out Tuesday.
Buy my wife's coasters. Teasing. They sell like crazy. I'm just busting balls, though.
The coasters are awesome.
The coasters, like, every time, like, every day I come home, like, what are you doing? Like, making 8,000 coasters again.
They're beautiful.
That's all she does. That's her only job there, Jay.
Mm-hmm.
Is making, basically. Like, she's coaster woman.
I got news for you, too.
Mm.
Jody Michael, a few months back, she said that she thought Christian from Hooked on Musky Baits was cute.
There you go. Son of a bitch stole my wife. Christian, I'm coming for you, you son of a bitch. That's it. It's on.
Anyway. Oh, boy. Yeah, anyway.
Anyway, well, cheers, Pepsis. First up, it's David. Oh, I said that wrong. It's David, not David. I'm teasing. David, what sucker rig do you prefer and why? How exactly do you set the hook on a sucker? Do you lead it? Do you try to find the head? I've watched Pete main it. Seems like he makes quite the event of it, and other guys just schwack them. What do you think? Oy vey. What I prefer is, if I'm fishing meat, I don't like nose rigs. I've played with that. I'm not knocking it. I know some guys are like, I'm a nose rig guy. I'm this guy. I'm that. What I do. I'll just give you what I do.
Yeah.
I know I'm an idiot, but maybe on the nose rigs, I feel like I've had a couple just kill over dead. Like it didn't get it in there quite right. Or the nose rig thing was too big or
it killed the sucker. Really?
I've seen it because I'm dumb. No kidding. Trying to force it in. I've got proof. I've got witnesses. So state law.
Wow.
So, I'm back to drinking, folks. If you can't tell. <Jeez. laughs> Dried out there for half of January. Maybe the sucker is too small. Maybe, like I said, user error, you know, and I say that all the time. Like me and Jay are talking about, like, somebody will return something or bring something in. Like I threw this at a truck and it broke. Well, you're not supposed to throw baits at a truck, but so operator error, user error. I prefer to take a rig, simple wire, two trebles. I like the 3/0 wide gap mustads. They're the same baits that are on like a Shallow Invader and a lot of baits. I like to use those, and I hook them through the lip, and I take a little piece of plastic, and I will hook it over that so the hook can't come out. You know, like, so I'm putting one through the lip and one right above the dorsal, and on the lip hook, like I said, I'm taking just whatever I got, literally whatever I got laying around that's like a hard plastic, like a piece of a package or anything. I'll cut little squares and just jam it through there, and it'll keep it from backing out. That's always served me well.
You know what else works really good for that is take like a bicycle tube, inner tube material.
Everybody's got those laying around.
Yep. Well, if you can find thin rubber like that, cut those up in little squares. That works great.
Are you a cyclist that's into musky fishing with live bait?
Saying is that you're running a two treble rig, one treble in the front, one over the dorsal.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
So, no, I know what you're saying. It's the exact same thing. Like the anything you can get the hook through that'll keep it from coming back out against the barb.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like Jay said, a rubber inner tube piece is like would be great or anything. Like I said, the last time I did it, I think I cut the corner off like a little, you know, like the plastic packages some of the baits come in. I cut like a little disc out of that and did it.
Okay.
It's just whatever. As long as it's hard plastic, I'm not doing anything big, but just enough to get over the barb so there it's not going to pop back out. So that you got him in the mouth there and he ain't coming off. I just run the two trebles. I only run kill rigs too, Jay. That's it. when do you set the hook? My favorite, I've probably said it before. Did I tell the story about the guy that the old guy's like, you got to smoke 3 cigarettes before you set the hook.
Oh, yeah, I remember that one. Right? Yeah, he's running one massive single hook, and he's like, yeah, you got to wait 32 minutes. And
hit him with that meat hook.
Yeah. Oh, God, make sure he swallows it completely.
You hook him right.
Catch and release practice. Right.
If you wait like 4.5 hours, the hook will actually come out the other end. There's no...
I use a 59-inch leader so he can digest it. I want to rip his guts.
The way I set a quick strike rig is as fast as possible. I really don't wait. To be honest with you, I'd be lying if I was like, I know I've said it before, and Pete Maine is the master of disaster setting a meat hook. I've seen him sneak up on them. I've seen him start the engine to get them to run, all this stuff. Once that rod bends and it takes a smidge and a drag, I just grab it and blast. And it's served me pretty well.
You're not one of these guys that it's just like, okay, I wait to visually see the fish turn and start to go out away from me before, you know what I mean?
If I thwack him hard enough, he's there. It's actually, yeah. I have video, and there's this really, I had a really fun time fishing with a guy that was a podcast listener. He knows who I'm talking about, and got his daddy's first muskie. And I thwacked that fish on me, dude, and I hooked him in the top of the mouth. It was all the way through, but in that video, we're going to use the clip for Muskie Shop TV. It's redonkulous because I actually come off my feet. Like, I kind of jumped, and it was pathetic. It was like white guy jumped from hell. But hit them hard. That's it. Just, I think if you hit them hard, I don't care if they're what direction they're going. If you take the slack out of the line and blast them, you're going to get them. Again, there might be scenarios where they're moving slow. I don't know. I mean, I got one move. Hit them as hard as you can. Reel down. The other thing, and I had a conversation with the dude a while ago. He called me. He's a friend of mine, and they had lost what he thought was a pretty dang good fish, right, on live bait. And we were talking about the setups, and he told me he was fishing a Dipsy diver rod, right? Which there's nines, tens, these big long rods. And we talked about it, and what I've always thought when it came to live bait, short and really firm. Short and really firm. Sorry. God. Anyway, I want a 7'6", 8' X heavy, somewhere in that neighborhood. The Troll live bait muskie shop rod, shameless plug. That's what I use. It's great because I just put one of my trolling clicker reel. My trolling clickers are already on there, right? And that's always served me really well because I don't want a lot of bend, because if you're trying to power set on this fish, most of the time it's vertical, if you will, or, you know, somewhat they're down, they're running with it, whatever. I want to put as much power on that fish as I can. I don't want these big, long, whippier rods, right? So I would say it's probably not a great idea to use maybe some of your, you know, a lot of your trolling rods have a lot more give to them, like specified trolling rods that are way long. So that would be a interesting thought process there. Probably one of the few times I'm going to implement a big swivel too.
A big swivel.
Mm-hmm. So on a live bait rig, I like just the big, what it, the crane swivels, Jay, isn't that it? What they call it with the big, it's got the turn.
A non-ball bearing one would be a crane swivel, okay. Most likely.
Whatever.
Yeah, probably.
I don't know. Whatever I got laying around, Dad bought a bag of them in the 70s and I'm still using them, you know. So
probably won't go bad.
Probably won't go bad. I like a swivel on that. So if the bait's moving around, I just don't overthink it. Once the rod bends over and he's going with it, Jackie's ass.
Mm.
That's what I think, you know, serves me well. That would be the thought.
Cool.
Richard, when and why would you change the hook size on a bucktail? I know you guys don't throw them. Do you only change your bucktail hooks when they rust out?
I know you guys don't throw them. Oh, come on now, Richard.
Richard. He follows up with, have the Titans been stolen by pirates, and do we need to mount a rescue operation?
Yes.
It's the premise of the video games Bad Dudes, if you owned a Nintendo. The president has been kidnapped by ninjas. God, I'm sorry, that's an 80s kid reference there. Mm-hmm. No, the Titans have not been stolen by pirates. The Titans have been stifled by world events and idiots, and I will have my day in the sun where I complain. Anyway, bucktails, hook size. We throw bucktails minimally, sure. You know. One time I broke my wrist. Blades always have their place. I actually told the guy in the boat today, we're gabbing, but I mean, they always have their place, but don't rely on it. You know what I'm saying? And you guys that listen, you know what I'm talking about. We just don't harp on it. But when it comes to the hook size, I'll say this, and I'm not picking on brands, but I'll just name a couple names. One of my favorite bucktails it's a mass production. It's not like a custom or anything. The Meps double flashaboo. Great bucktail, right? Underhooked. Period. Full stop. I think that's a Steve Hiding number. It comes with like 2 4-aught Eagle Claw looking hooks, right? Underhooked. My opinion, some of the Booker stuff is underhooked. It's a matter of cost. It's a matter of ease of use for your average fisherman. You know what I'm saying? Because I've asked Joe about it directly. It's like, okay, your average dude is just going to, and I'm not talking like the guys that listen to Musky podcasts. I'm talking about the guy that walks into the store, buys a bucktail, and he goes. It's efficient. He's going to keep him from getting fouled up as much. But in the same flip of the coin, Booker fishes 8-aughts on his bucktails. 8s.
So he's not going up one size. He might be going up 3 sizes.
He's going up
in some cases
to Redonkulousville.
Okay, yeah.
And that's how he catches. You've seen these videos. It's a big secret. He'll probably kill me for saying it. You see these beak hooked fish. Like, he is the master of catching fish that short strike. Frickin', he's got an 8-aught on there.
Mm-hmm.
If they short strike, he's jacking them. And they're, we could do a 2-hour podcast on how to sharpen a hook a pro boy. But most of his bucktails he's running, and you've seen in Booker videos in the TV show years back, they're 8-aughts. My rule of thumb, every bucktail's got at least a 7 on it. I like 8s as well. I've seen what it'll do. It there's something about... I don't know how to put it. I see it in my head of like when a fish short strikes a bucktail, right, Jay?
Mm-hmm.
If you think about a fish, he's coming in directly. A short striking fish is nipping at the back of the blade, the back of the hook, right? And he puts his mouth around the skirt and he just sort of pops at it. In my head, the hook sort of turns. Does that make sense? Like when you feel it, he's got his mouth there. The bigger the hook, the more percentage you're going to have there.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's popping at it. With that being said, segueing to, there's a time and a place, if you're dealing with a bunch of short strikers, where not having heat shrink is a good thing. So when he does short strike it, the hook sort of kicks down and you blast it through the top of his mouth. Ninja secret, folks.
You're not just going wider on the hook, too. You can extend it further backwards, too.
Well, we'll crawl down the rabbit hole for a second, which is adding a stinger even behind that. I've done that on. If you're getting it, this is a ninja secret here, folks, for the ages. And I did. It's on the app, or you can find it. I did a bucktail modification thing where I'm adding plastics and blades on the back of things. You can come through the eyelet of that hook using heat shrink and wrapping some leader wire and add a small hook even behind your bucktail. You want to talk devastating and scary. So you've got like a 3-aught, 4 inches, 5 inches behind that. So he's coming up to hit. Do the math. I'll stop there, right? So that's sort of a nasty little ninja trick, is adding a stinger hook well behind your skirt. Now, you got to be careful with that power and that knowledge. Don't have it too far back there where they're choking it. But if you go, oh, man, I'm getting short struck today. Adding that hook behind that, he's going to come up and try to short strike the skirt and accidentally have a 3-aught in his mouth. And so that's a way to put some fish in the boat. As far as changing them, like I said, it's a confidence thing for me. 4-aughts, 5-aughts work all the time. I want a bigger hook, so if he does get his mouth on it, I'm going to blast him. So I change it because of factory stuff. You know, when you get down to your downsize stuff, your 500 series stuff, your single blade stuff, you know, I like a big hook. I just do. I'm trying to think of, like, maybe it's the figure eight little guy or Esox Assault or, you know, the 500 stuff. As long as I'm not dealing with really thick cover and really nasty weed and stuff, I like one big hook even on the small bucktails, control my running depth a little bit better. Because if you think about it, a lot of these small blades, you want to put some heat on them. So that adds some extra weight, makes them cast better, and it's going to allow you to get a better hooking percentage. Because a lot of times, those little bucktails, they might not hit them dead on. They might just head shoot them too. So having a bigger hook, I just up the hooks. I mean, that's it. Seven. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it, yeah. It's minimally a 7, if not an 8. That's when I'm going to change my bucktail hooks. With that being said, I do not run. I don't think I run a single bucktail with a single hook. I just don't like it. I'll always put a second one up at the beads. Mm-hmm. Most of your bucktails, a lot of the brands come with a second hook in them. I like having two. It can't hurt unless you're on a pattern where you're like, I'm fishing weed tops. I don't want anything to drag down there and get it. You see what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
And at that point, if I'm fishing that pattern, I'm going to fish a freaking spinnerbait.
Right, right.
So in my world, bucktails, double weighted bucktails always have two hooks. If I'm fishing weed tops and getting caught and picking up weeds and crap are a problem, I might just take a frickin', and what's the, there's, I love it. Ace baits is a favorite of mine. I'll take an ace bait and put like a 10 blade on that, and that's thumping its brains out, and I'm not worried as much as about crap getting stuck.
No.
So yeah, I do change the hooks, and I do change them when they rust out, Jay.
So, good move.
It. That's it.
Solid.
You know, for the 4 hours a year, we throw bucktails. Anyway, goodness gracious.
Yeah.
Jason. Yeah. Mm. Jason says, I'm on a mid-sized lake in the North Woods. The majority of the summer is, you know, I fish on this one body of water. I travel some, but this is where I call home, or what I call home. He said he's been listening to the podcast and upped his catches by 1,000,000,000% in the last 2 years. 1,000,000,000. Caught 1,000,000,000 muskies, Jay.
That was awesome.
That's amazing. Good job, Jason. No, he's upped it a bunch, and he said he's really changed his game. I'm paraphrasing here. Added cranks, added glide baits, got off of, that's so funny, I didn't plan this. He said, I got off the bucktail train and started catching fish. So, there you go.
Mm.
He says, what ninja move should I try? I feel like I'm coming out of the beginning stages of musky fishing and just advancing a little bit. What ninja trick do we have up our sleeve? Ooh.
For fishing mid-sized lakes in northern Wisconsin?
Yeah. Tubes.
So. Well, if you haven't tried that, they certainly were great. We had a fantastic 2 or 3 week stretch using those bad boys this summer. Super productive.
I would think, you know, if you're doing the cranks and you're doing the structure fishing, I would say something that's just out there, you know, in my head, mid size. I mean, I'm not thinking like, you know, I sort of have my own concept of what the mid-size lakes are or whatever, right? I mean, if you're a caster, man, take some freaking structure trolling. Listen to some of the stuff we talked about, structure trolling. Take the structure podcast and the trolling podcast and put them together. And just adding that to your game is going to be a big move, right? Getting super proficient with your gliders for that. And then, you know, there's not one trick or tip per se, as just keep building your game, right?
If you fine-tune that whole structure element, the bait selection will come naturally.
You'll come up with your own ninja move.
And
if you're spending that much time there learning that lake and knowing about that lake, the ninja move is and if you really know a body of water in this and you spent 2 years there, maybe, you know, a lot of guys that we've talked to, they've spent a lot of time on the body of water, but they're perceiving it differently. And I would say the thing that I force myself to do every time, every day I'm on the water, is I force myself to approach things differently. One spot at random, right? And you find habits. We all become habitual. And in the podcast, we always try to just bust the balls out of freaking bucktails, right? And it's not because they're ineffective. And we talked about bucktails a lot. But, dude, bucktails have caught more fish than anything else. But bucktails get thrown more than anything else. So, do they work all the time? No. So, it's about the law of averages. It's about doing high percentage things. It's about breaking away from the mold so we can all be better musky anglers. But for me, it's like if you fish the same couple bodies of water nonstop, you get into these habitual patterns of, I might be changing baits and I might be fishing the structure and I might know all this shit, But then you catch yourself like, I come into this and I do the exact same thing every day. Is approaching the structure in a different manner. Approaching the body, whether we're fishing shoreline cover or whether we're fishing a structural element, or obviously, hopefully a combination of both, is changing up my boat control and changing how I come into it. Because I am notoriously bad, especially filming for Muskie Shop TV, because we've been doing this for a couple years now. We got all the crap coming out of like camera side, right? And that screwed me up a bunch of like, I'm always fishing off the same side of the boat now. So I always come into everything in the same way. And I look at my, I had this really fun, this dude from Virginia, we fished together. He asked if my trolling motor was on a planned path, right? Because he could see on the screen that it was like perfectly in line, and I'm dog legging and I'm doing all this stuff. So it's day after day after day after day after day after day. Here I'm laying down the same trails. And they're mirror images, and I respond the same way. And it's habitual. But I do that in because it works, but I make sure, regardless, whether the client knows it, whether I know it, whatever. Well, I know it, but what I will do is I'll just take a pause and I'll go, okay, how can I approach this differently? Right? I know it's a good spot. Maybe if I come from the other direction, I will learn something, right? Maybe if I approach it from the other side of the boat or and how I'm approaching that area will affect things. So the next step, if you really know the lake and you're good with all the presentations, is start mixing up your boat control, which is the next step up here in the game. We got all the presentations down. You can work cranks, you can work bucktails, you can work everything. You can work all the baits, and you can do triggering actions with all of them, and they're all effective, and you've caught a bunch of fish on every kind of bait there is, so you got a feel for it. The next move for that is tweaking your boat control and tweaking how you present to a spot and implement the boat as a tool. Right? That's a whole other podcast in its other element. Because I can tell you right now, the way your trolling motor's pulling, the way the boat's drifting, wind, all this stuff affects everything. So that would be the next ninja move, is really look about how you're approaching things. Keith! Subsurface gliders worked fast versus topwaters. Discuss.
Say that again. Subsurface
gliders.
What? Okay.
Right?
Gliders work versus fast, topwaters.
Right? But I get what he's saying, which is like a glide bait banging right under the water surface versus a walk the dog topwater.
Right.
Left, right.
Just a few inches apart in the water column. Right.
Yeah. I mean,
absolutely.
Muskie's feet up and at an angle, right? I have a couple tricks with gliders, and I have a couple tricks with walk the dog baits, and they go opposite of what they're supposed to do. So like, if you can get an overly weighted walk the dog and work it left, right, and then occasionally bang it down so it dives, that'll get a strike. Okay. But really, really buoyant gliders work quick, and then let them fall or send them down is going to trigger strikes as well. That is some smart poker there. And to me, that's like a Canada thing. I deal with that. You know, I fish eagle. I've said it a million times. Eagle loves some top water, right?
Yeah.
And so that becomes a matter of you can dial in. Now, you got to play with both. But, you know, in our dude, I need to call him. We have that guy, the dude from Pennsylvania that built me and you some custom gliders just for funsies that were like insanely buoyant. But would dive. That bait just popped in my head as something I've actually used it for, is getting a fish to just schwack, where it's not quite top water, but it kind of is. You know, getting a bait that'll sort of linger in both worlds is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Because like you said, it's just inches, but there's something to be said about a really fast glider and then just letting it drop, or jamming your top water down where it'll do something. You know, in the thought process, and you go, well, what does that matter? you know, not to bring Booker back up, but look what he does with these top raiders, jams it down, and it turns into a bucktail.
Yeah, right.
Here's this fish has followed the whole way to the boat and could eat it off the top. He's in that high water column stuff, but we got to take him down deep to eat. So, you know, sort of tweaking your baits for that, there's something to be said there.
Yeah, I agree.
You look at, and I'm trying to think of baits that sort of straddle both worlds, the super shallow manta. They make a super shallow version which runs inches. And you can get it to pop out into the top of the water. I mean, it's a really shallow running bait. If you're moving them on, say, like a Weagle or a Jackpot, that might be a place to go. Because you're going to have to make an assessment off of follows in that situation, in my opinion. Are you moving a bunch of fish on Weagles? Or you're moving a bunch on Jackpot, but they're not eating it? It might be time to get in the box and go to a manta. Because if you look at, like, the small manta, what is it, 8J? Is it 7 or 8 on the manta? Okay, so I'm moving them on a Jackpot, but I'm going to go to the manta, which is practically the same size. That's what I was thinking, size. So a standard size manta. We got the same size and profile, essentially. But we're going to drop it down the water column just a hair. And I've made that
work. I think what you're saying, too, is regardless if this is a surface bait or a subsurface bait that floats, is neutral, or it sinks, you got to change elevation to get them to commit if they're consistently following.
Right. And I mean,
that's the number one key.
Yeah, it's the key. It's just like, and again, there's not like a I do this and I do that with that scenario. Just it's a rule of thumb. If they're moving on top waters like that and they won't bash them, 2-3 follows like that or the same fish, go to that manta. I keep one manta in the boat for that very reason. And it's a top water follow, because it seems like fish that are on the cusp on top water are they're weird anyway.
Right.
They're just weird. I mean, it's just like, why are you up here and why are you raging at a bait? But you're not going to do it. Just try that. And so, you know, you walk the dog topwaters, have a manta. I have a manta because it's about all it takes. Have that guy on hand as a backup. The wood shums would get that done too. Some of these wood baits will run kind of high. Another bait, if you want to go dicey and pricey on it, which I love, are the lynchums. If you keep a high rod angle, that thing will run right at subsurface.
Yeah,
you know, it's got a soft tail, so I like that. And Keith, that's a cool question, because it you'll see that, you will see the difference there. You know, you look at he's just caught so many freaking topwater fish. When you make a video called, or a whole VHS tape called Topwater Terrors, you caught some topwater fish. I've mentioned before, Booker's number one top raider, he calls it Lenny. It's been respray painted 7 trillion times. If you watch the Topwater Terrors VHS tape, if you go to Goodwill right now, right, and you buy a VHS player, and you get on eBay and buy a copy of Topwater Terrors on VHS, you can see this bait.
He brought that bait into the store once. Yeah. Did I tell you that story?
You did. It was amazing.
When Mikniak was working?
Johnny boy.
Joe opened his tackle box. He had a little Plano, and he goes, "There's Lenny right there." Mm-hmm. That's it. And Mikniak reached for it, grabbed it, and Joe he put a chokehold on him and just somehow got him onto the ground before I could even stop him. An incredible act of violence. It's just
ultra violent.
It was a pure reactionary, and it's just don't touch Lenny. It's the last thing I heard Joe scream, you know,
before he bit him on the forehead. Do you know how much force it takes to break the skin on somebody's forehead with your teeth, Jay? Anyway,
yes.
But that bait, it runs low. I mean, it doesn't. Mm-hmm. It doesn't run. It runs really low, and that's something that's interesting. Of like. It's sort of squat in the water instead of riding on top of it. I would think, and I do love topwater. We always talk about put away the topwater. it just finding the magic, and I'm saying consistent for like your week in Canada, your week up north, can be a matter of just a little bit of augmentation. So maybe a bell sinker on a top rater or a fat bastard, or having that manta that's going to run right under there. Have some alternatives, because it's just a micro freaking difference sometimes on what they'll just hammer. Anyway, Carl, how do you determine when's the right time to use a big rubber bait like a bulldog versus a deep crank? If we're fishing deep edges and we're fishing for fish that are holding deep, why would you choose one or the other? Huh. Jay, here's what I think.
Talk to me.
It's between big rubber and a crank. Mm-hmm. Obviously,
deep diving crank.
Right. You can achieve the mm-hmm. same thing. So let's mm-hmm. And he said, you know, big crank baits in the thing. So big crank bait, big deep crank bait, big fork reef digger. They make one that'll go like, I think it'll dive 700 feet, right?
It's a good one.
Let's if we're talking, oh my God, it just sound country as hell there. Let's say mag dogs, and then any baits that could theoretically be in there. We sell triple D's at the Muskie Shop. That's a good one. So like the triple D for a deep crank.
Cisco Kid 1800.
Bigger than that. What's the freaking Slammer makes one? They make a big ass.
Oh, they make some 10 inch. Yeah,
right. That's what I'm saying. Like, let's go
Shad Diver.
Let's go the Mag Dog and the big ones. So like the triple D, the Reef Digger, which should be called the Big Fork Grave Digger, and then the Slammer, the Monster Slammer. You know, so size and profile being equal is what I'm trying to get at, right? So I'm giving you some big profile deep divers that will match the profile of a Magnum Bulldog. What I think and what I've seen happen here is I've caught fish like the day before, the day after. It's a day-to-day thing. Obviously, you're going to have to source it out, and you're going to have to spend the time in the water to figure out what they want that day, but playing with both of them, you can accomplish a lot of the same goals there, right? So the commonality of your deep diving cranks is they're going to float, right? So it could be a get it down to depth, rip, bang, and up. Rubber's going to fall. So you've got a ascending and a descending presentation.
There you go. The whole elevation right. thing comes into play again.
Right yeah, back yeah. to what we were talking about with surface baits. Now we're mm-hmm. just on the other end of the spectrum, right? Jay, are you on the spectrum?
Don't even bring up Charter Spectrum. Yes.
Charter Spectrum. Different spectrum, but you're on both. Anyway, take everything we just said in the last 3 minutes and apply it off the bottom of the lake. Same thing. There's up and there's down. There's up and there's down. I mean, you cannot tell me that the freaking Slammer 10-inch deep diver is not moving as much, if not more, water than a mag dog, right? You mm-hmm. have different speed and depth control. I today on the boat, I was telling the client, you have control of two things in fishing. Speed and depth. That's it. We don't have control of the fish. We have control of all the elements that affect, and when I sing about boat stuff, right, mm-hmm. it's all cyclical. When I say change your approach on your boat, guess what that is influencing some regard? Speed and depth control. Maybe I'm hitting it deeper when I come in this pass or whatever, but that's all we can control. How do we throw the lure out? What are we doing with it, right? If I rip it, it goes fast and it falls like this. If I turn the handle like this, it goes slow. If I turn the handle like this, it goes fast. Fast bait goes deep. Slow bait stays high, right? That's all you have control of. So the way you look at your baits are tools and how do they fall? And what do they do when they're under, you exert force on them, right? Mm-hmm. If I exert force on this bait, it does what, right? Something to always observe is, what does a bait do when you do nothing? Does it wobble on the way up? Does it wobble on the way down, right?
That's probably something most people don't think about too much.
Well, I mean, you look at a new bait, in labor of love here, so shameless plug. When I pounded on the design of the Titan, I wanted that thing to rock back and forth and come up at crazy angles and do everything that it could when you did nothing. So you pull it down, and when it comes up, it goes. It might go to the left, it might go to the right, but it's going to wobble and it's going to do crazy shit on its way up without force exerted on it.
That's right.
Literally all you can do. If you can pull it, rip it, turn it, bop it, flop it, smack it, dap it. But all you can do is exert force on a bait so it moves forward, and then it does something after. That's it. It does something on its own. That's what's a magical bait. You look like a hellhound, right? Quintessential bait. The drifter hellhound and the freaking phantom glide baits. They are bread and butter, peanut butter and jelly, freaking American as apple pie. They're successful baits because each of them intrinsically does something interesting when you leave it alone. So they rock back and forth. They do some funky stuff a little bit on their own. And that's it. So what does a bait look like when it's not having force exerted on it? That's interesting. So, you know, the selection between the two is, do I want the bait to fall or do I want it to float up? Because a bulldog, I can't remember. And I honest to God, I may have not ever had a strike on a bulldog in motion. I've had a strike when I came back to hit it and it just starts moving. I can't remember the last time or if I've ever had one where during the rip, in the middle of the rip, he hit it.
Right. It doesn't happen.
It's on the fall.
Yeah, snags don't count.
Snags don't count. You know, freaking snagged a tree trunk, boom, or ran it into a carp. But with that being said, it's like, is it the chicken or the egg, Jay? What came first? Did he hit it because I ripped the bait right, or did he hit it because it undulated on the way down? We will never know. But they usually hit, when you hear everybody talk about, when do they hit, when do glide baits get hit, Jay?
On the pause.
When do bulldogs get hit?
Same thing.
When do diving rise baits get hit?
Every cast.
The Titan. No, I wasn't thinking about that, but like, Suix get launched on when it's floating up and it's not actually under direct force.
Yeah.
So there's something to be said there. So the only difference for me is not about I'm fishing big rubber or I'm fishing cranks. What do I need to apply today to elicit the response I want? The response I want is a strike. So do the fish want it floating up or do they want it falling? That's how you determine that. Now, how do you get to that point is do both effectively. Now, that's easier said than done, which is you have to effectively be able to fish rubber in a competent manner, and you have to effectively and competently fish deep cranks. Now, the fun thing is this, is it comes back to what I just said. There's only two things you can do, Jay. You can move the bait or you cannot move the bait. So with big cranks and that, I own some of the slammer, the big honkers, right?
Yep.
Throw it down, reel it down a couple feet and start wanging on that thing just like you would a bulldog. That's about what you can do. You can straight retrieve it or you can rip it and that's it. Not hard to do. So there's your retrieve and that's it. You know, and if you approach it that way where you go, what does this tool do? And again, I had this conversation on the boat this week. And I'm getting a far afield, but I'll preach a smidgen. But, you know, I hope to somebody out there listening realize what I'm saying about what baits do, right? Baits either do everything and then they do nothing, right? You know, so we talk about like twitch baits. A good twitch bait is going to float up, you know, this dead, either a broken back minnow, or it's floating head up and it looks like it's dying. It's got a look on its own. Very rarely do you see fish hit while the bait is advancing. You see them hit when the bait is stopped. There's something intrinsic about that bait when it stops that is going to elicit that strike. So looking at your tackle box, figure out what they do best, right? And this comes into a question we get, when do you modify baits? When do you do this? When do you do that? is what is it doing when I'm not doing anything? Okay. So like with a deep crankbait, I want to get it down to, let's say we're fishing an edge and it's 10 to 12 feet like a taper, right, Jay? So it drops off and I feel like, not feel, but bait conditions, yada, 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 has led me to a hypothesis that muskies are at a, on a 10-foot break, right? I want to get my bait to those deep fish because if we think ahead and we go, if they're holding deep, they possibly could be negative and neutral, or there's a food source down there, so I need to present to them as close as possible. I need to look at my tackle box and go, what baits get down there? So that's my starting point, right? Livingston Lures Pounder, Slammer Deep One, Reef Digger, Cisco Kid 1800, right? Other baits that'll run 10 feet real quick, or in that zone, 8 to 10, Big Fork Avatar. Right? I got five baits. So I'm going to go Cisco Kid, Livingston Lures Pounder, Slammer Deep, Big Fork Avatar, Cisco Kid, right? Now I'm going to look at those baits and go, which one's going to have the slowest float up? Which one's going to have the highest float up? What, how fast do they rise by observing them in the water, what they do when I'm not moving them? And then I'm going to work my way through them and go, okay, I just moved a fish on the Big Fork Avatar, which is a balsa bait that's a heavily epoxied, and that thing floats up like a son of a gun, right? And it floats up fast. Then I might try the one with the slowest float up, and it gets bashed 10 casts in, and you got a fish on, you go, okay, when I ripped it and I paused it and I let it float up, it was a slower rise, bammo whammo. Now we're in the game. So you can sort of look at your baits there if you have a multiple selection baits. But let's say you own another bait that sort of gets in that game. What, the 22 long? Runs pretty good? Okay, let's say you just have a 22 long. And Lungeon Lures makes great lures. High quality stuff. But let's say you're on a budget and you got, you have a 22 long and that's it. Well, that's when you break out your little bell sinkers. And you put them on the front hook. And you go, I tried this many ounces and it didn't work. And I tried this many ounces and it didn't work. I don't mean ounces, like it could be like 3/4 of an ounce, 1/2 ounce, whatever, freaking sinkers. Play around with the rise rate of that bait, because the rate of rise when you're not reeling it or not ripping it is going to determine that. So you can just tweak that bait. And that's how you get to the point of where you look at like some of the stuff we've done using lead tape or plumber's tape on stuff to augment a bait to get the desired result. So you're going to get there and you're going to be able to do that after you have patterned the fish. You got to get there. You know what I'm saying? Bam, 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 bam. It's not like I'm walking out on the boat and just augmenting baits because I feel I felt something in my bones. Don't, what is it, Jay? Don't let what?
Don't let luck or feeling determine your fishing success.
So, that's it. You know, I'm not winging it here and just going, boys, I'll tell you what, this bait needs a 1/2 ounce of weight today because I saw a squirrel in a tree. But, you know, that might be the long-winded answer between big rubber and that, but there's something to be said on the flip side, and I'll shut up about it, which is, sometimes you need to add weight to these rubber baits to get them where you need to be and also increase how fast they fall off to get them to be in a muskie's mouth. So if you look at fishing in that regard, muskie fishing in particular, you have very little control other than how deep a bait goes and how quickly it rises. So if you tweak those two elements, you're going to have more tools in the toolbox. Jacob, West Virginia Creeker here. Creeker! What presentations do you recommend during winter for small West by God waters? He said, I'm moving a few fish on cranks, but no eats. He said, I saw Ricky Bobo fishing with a 19-pound live carp. Good. Ricky Bobo. Craker. Man, it depends on how deep that water. If you're fishing, if you're really creeking, you're fishing shallow stuff, there's not a lot of water to work with. Find your holes, right? A lot of guys are fishing, especially in the winter, you're fishing John boats. You don't have a lot, you don't have the down scan, side scan, right? We're pushing this thing over a freaking hill and getting it on these creeks. get a feel for how deep that water is and find your deep holes, obviously. Oh man. I mean, you can't go wrong with a crane bait in West Virginia. That's like religion. we were just talking about the Cisco kids, but what's the small Cisco kid, Jay? Not the Wrangler, the straight one.
600 model.
600 model Cisco kid is a rip bait. Always liked it. Always thought it was great.
That super shallow one?
No, the mid.
The mids, yeah.
You know, so you can sort of tweak that for where you're at there. Man, I don't know does anybody still make a pikey minnow, Jay? Do you guys sell a pikey minnow?
They're kind of long gone. I don't know if anyone's making any right now.
Well, the other thing is this AC shiners. That's long gone. I'm talking. I was there when the old testament was written on West Virginia creek fishing. Mm-hmm. I do like the Cisco kids, baby DRs. The baby little jointed DRs are sweet. Back to lunge and man, 22 shorts. Was it the 22 short long bill?
That's the deep diver. There's a 22 short SS short square. That's a real more of a shallower deal. Kind of, you know, 3 foot deal.
I like the 22 short with the longer bill.
Okay.
That thing's going to serve a lot of purposes for you in that shallow water, man. That's glide bait country though, too. So a lot of those deep holes and giving it hang time, cause a lot of that water's still moving. So find your pocket pools and eddies and work those deeper running cranks. Try the smaller stuff too, because the forage base a lot of times small, and then get into those big glides. So 22 short Cisco kid, 600 and anything from a hellhound to a lynchum on what you want to pay. That's going to be money for you. You know, those are things I'm going to be looking at in that regard. Anyway, moving here, Sam. What knot do you guys tie when you're using a no BS system? And what do you guys do for a tie on for 7-strand leaders? Jay, what do you use? A freaking Japanese bondage knot? What knot do you use?
I don't know what it's called. Cinch knot or something, maybe?
I don't know.
Basic knot tying to tie on. I bring it around the loop twice, and then I tie that cinch.
Jay, on
a
scale of 1 to 7, in a scale of 1 to 8, how much are you into the band slip knot?
Not very.
So we'll give that a 6.
Slip knot,
Jay.
Okay.
You know,
I wonder if those guys musky fish.
They're from Iowa.
Yeah.
I know. Yeah, of all things, weird segue. I've actually met Jim Root from Slipknot when I was my time in Nashville working in the. He's super nice. He's not the angry young man you'd expect.
Jim Root's in Slipknot. Oh, okay. Yeah. He's that Telecaster master. Okay.
He does have a bitchin' Telecaster freaking custom. That thing is sick. But he was like, I was talking to him. I was like, you know, this is in their mask days when before everybody knew, and I got talking to him, and you know when somebody's in the business and somebody's not, and we got talking to him, and it sort of hit me when he told me, and you know, we were actually talking tellies at a store and ended up talking for a good bit, and I was just like, wow, he's a well-adjusted young man. Anyway, Jay uses a slip knot because he's totally into metal. It's literally Jay just balls it up like a cat.
Hey, if you want to hear some good metal, I didn't even tell you. I did a little short social media post video with Fred today, and I used some music for it. It's just called metal. It's you.
It's background.
Yeah, it rocks. It's Freddy, and he's rocking with some Chaos custom colors. Wow.
I don't know. Were they supposed to be guitar sounds, Jay?
Yeah, that's screaming guitars.
Screaming guitars. You know what? Speaking of, there's a dude I fish with, and he's like a high school football coach. He's a great dude. He came to the bash, but he's like into like just the heaviest of heavy metal. Which, you know, whatever. I'm into it. I can't get there. I'm not into like Norwegian black metal or anything. Are you, Jay?
Negative.
Band called Spirit Box from Canada. It's pretty ripping. I like them. They got a great beat, and you can dance to it. As far as knots, man, I don't think it, a good musky knot. Palomar, improved clinch knot, cinch knot. Musky Shop blog actually just did a video where they show a bunch of musky knots.
Actually,
which is Jay's,
I made that video.
Which is Jay's Slipknot cover band called Musky Knot. And
it is on there. Sure enough.
All the guys from Musky Shop, they wear jumpsuits.
Hey everybody, I'm Jim from the Musky Shop.
Well, you don't need to pull it up on the
there
thing.
There we go. I just pulled it up.
So
it works.
The entire staff of the Musky Shop is in a Slipknot cover band called Musky Knot.
Yeah, right.
Jay plays kazoo.
don't be putting these ideas for our spring music video in my head like,
oh shit,
Steve,
that would be
this
funny.
Hour, because
Musky
yeah,
Knot.
It would be good.
It would be good. Musky Knot. Oh man, wait, dude, wait and bleed.
I'm writing that down right now. Musky wait. Knot. Okay, got it.
Anyway, God, people are like, why are they talking about Slipknot?
Why are they even talking about anything?
Thought this was a musky podcast. These guys aren't serious enough. I'm so freaking serious.
You know what I almost forgot? We've got a big sale at the Musky Shop this weekend, starting now, Friday through Sunday, all weekend long.
Got deals and steals.
Big one, Steve. 10% off Lunge and Lures.
There you go.
10% off your favorite glide bait, Lynchums. 10% off Christian's Hooked on Musky Bait Bucktail lineup.
Mm-hmm.
Hot Tail Gliders. Another great little kind of a boutique, kind of a custom bait there.
Nice.
And all Livingston lures.
Nice.
And $50 to $75 off a couple different reel lines.
That is nice. Nice.
Yeah, can't say which ones they are because we can't advertise it, but... on the website of where to click and to reveal the sale price. It's the only way we can list.
Can I say it?
Go for it.
They're knocking like $75 off of Daiwa, right?
I think so.
And in Revo, so they can't. Yeah. The Musky Shop can't say it, but I can.
Okay.
Which is a big bunch of savings because they were able to buy them before all this crap happened, and so the price increased. We'll leave it at that. Anyway, what are we tying on to? If you're using a
knots.
Swivel, yeah, with your knots, just have it. I don't like a split ring on the end of my leader. That's my tying point, right? So there are solid steel rings available, or use a good swivel or the ring off of a swivel, like a crane swivel, which is the same thing. Just have a good tie point. I like it to be, I don't like tying directly to wire or the wire strand because I feel like there's not enough contact area there. Right.
It's a good point. That's a good point about the split ring. I would mm-hmm. never tie directly to
a split ring.
Period.
So find a solid ring or like I said, for years, I would just cut parts off of the other rings because I'm a hillbilly and cut swivel support. But just have a solid tie on there. Wes, when do you know when it's time to troll? Does weather, water, or seasonality matter the most? What conditions scream trolling to you? Hangovers.
That was a quick answer. You didn't have to think about that too long. Oh, man.
When I'm hungover. Oh, yeah, boys, brother. Trolling bite, just put her out there.
Well, that's a whole episode right there. When to troll versus
I'll give you
how you doing?
I'll give you the quick cliff note. It is about where muskies are at in the water column, right? So if we have ascertained through diligent patterning that they are deeper than 6 feet, right? We know that mm-hmm. the majority of the active fish and the forage are deeper than 6 feet. Trolling becomes a primary consideration. Now, that could be dictated by a nasty cold front or the seasonality, like winter or later in the year, right? Or falling water, say in a reservoir, the water's falling heavily. So now we know that the majority of our fish are sub 6 feet, right? It is difficult to present consistently deeper than 6 feet, right? We just talked about big rubber baits and big crank baits in that same size class. So if we're targeting fish that might be negative and neutral because of a inclement weather or something happening with our water, Well, we don't need to be throwing these giant baits down there. We need to get small baits deep and keep them deep so they're as close to the muskies as possible. So it becomes a serious consideration to troll so we have control of our depth and speed, because that's all we can control. So if we need to get those baits down there, it's far easier to keep the baits in the zone, quote unquote, for the longer period of time. So if your conditions and everything are pointing at fish deeper than 6 feet, forage deeper than 6 feet, that's when I start thinking trolling, because I know I can take a bait like a tough shad or a little Cisco kid or a baby DR or a lungeon, you know, all these great baits. And I can get them down, look at the app, and it's got the line lengths for these things on there, and you go X amount of line. I can get it consistently in that zone and keep it there longer. A cast runs in a C shape, right? You throw it out, the bait initially dives, it hits its maximum depth, and then it's on its way up. That's it. So if muskies are unwilling to come up higher in the water column, 1/3 of your cast is theoretically effective on a break line. So that would be your rule of thumb. If muskies are on that primary break, that first contact point, they're holding because of a factor that you don't have control of, and you need to get a bait down there and keep it there, that's when it's time to troll. You know, that's like in places like Wisconsin where you've only got single line options, man, sometimes that's a game. Like, I said, well, I can only troll one line, so I don't want to do it. And you go, well, you can cast all day and it's going to be highly ineffective opposed to just sucking it up and trolling that one line. You're at least going to be in the game. Mm-hmm. So that would be the quick rule of thumb. Ben, my dear friend Ben, the Muskie Shop Bash falls on the weekend of my anniversary again. It's actually the exact day of my wedding anniversary. Outside of casting all day or taking a booze cruise, it's funny, he says, outside of casting all day or taking a booze cruise, what I call trolling, what activities does Minocqua have to offer? He said, can I talk the wife into a quiet weekend getaway, particularly activities she can do by herself and cost little to no monies? Her hobbies consist of drinking wine and spending money and breaking my balls. What, Jay?
Well, that's a weak excuse, number one, Ben. I mean, wedding anniversary? Come on.
Oh, man. I have missed my wife's birthday for a decade, Jay, due to muskie fishing.
Well, that's not good.
Well, I don't love her. I love my wife dearly. She's my best friend, but God, I've missed her birthday. I feel awful. Like, 1 year, I will pretend I'm going out of town for some muskie thing in July and then surprise her. It's tough July things. It's musky peak in the north. Jay, we're from St. Germain, which is like the scummier version of Minocqua, if I don't say so myself.
Thanks.
Well, you know, I mean, Minocqua's no Eagle River, sir, but teasing. North Woods again here. Now, what is there to do for a woman's in Minocqua?
In July. Shopping. All those towns have extensive shopping areas for gifts, knickknacks, and anything in that range.
You got the little downtown area with the boutiques.
Those stinking rummage sale things. What do you call those?
Called a yard sale or a flea market.
Not flea market. Yeah, there's flea markets almost daily in the Northwoods too in the summer.
Wow.
People go to those by the thousands. There's nature walks. You can rent a kayak, a canoe. Mm,
a cabin.
You can go camping. You could go bird watching.
Do you work for the Board of Tourism? Because this sucks.
There is a lot of stuff to do. There is a lot of swimming areas.
Mm, you can go swimming.
Yep. You can go horseback riding.
There's an
amazing zoo in the area. Second largest zoo in Wisconsin is in Minocqua. Why are you laughing? They've got a raptor cage. They've got an entire raptor section, so you can go there and pet the ospreys and the eagles.
Life finds a way.
Oh, there's a lot of stuff there, you know. if you're not into second fishing. So,
folks. Yeah. Minocqua, Wisconsin, America's tourism destination.
Well, you can stay at the waters, just you know, half a mile from the Muskie Shop, and go to the world's largest water park.
We have flea markets. And Wisconsin's second largest zoo.
Second largest.
If you put it that way, I kind of get it.
Just listen. This is a ask for forgiveness situation for you, Ben. This is a tough one. Now, yep. Minocqua, that area, if you guys have never been there, the Northwoods is a beautiful area. Not what I'd call a hub of nightlife or high-end shopping, but, I mean, it's quaint. You know what I'm saying? It's a nice, chill tourism destination. There's a billion places to stay. You could go watch the Minocqua Bats.
Yeah, that's true.
And go to the Wisconsin's second largest zoo. It's available to you at your fingertips. Where's Wisconsin's largest zoo, Jay?
I would guess it's the Milwaukee County Zoo.
There you go, folks. Make a weekend of it. Anyway, Jay, that is some informative stuff.
Thank you.
All right, folks. Say goodnight, Jay Bird.
Later, guys.
Later.